You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hello and welcome to the On The Money podcast. It's Thursday, the 11th of September. I'm Stephanie Youssef, filling in for Ricardo Gonçalves. Today, the Australian share market closed down 0.3%. I'll have a bit more on that a little later with Mark Gardner. But first, is housing affordability becoming a thing of the past? Well, new analysis from Domain says the dream of owning a home is becoming further out of reach. It's not only taking longer to save up for a deposit, but climbing house prices and mortgage repayments are driving the sharpest generational divide in decades. For more, I spoke to Domain's research chief, Dr. Nicola Powell. So Nicola, mortgage costs are the highest they've been in decades. Can you paint a picture of just how dire the situation is?
Mortgage serviceability has really changed over recent times. When you look at a typical new home loan, it now consumes about 54% of household disposable income. And that has risen rapidly over recent years. It technically is in mortgage stress. And when you compare it back to 2020, it was sitting at around 30%. And ultimately, we have seen a rapid rise in price over the last 5 years, which means that the burden of mortgage serviceability is certainly there on homeowners.
Why is affordability worsening?
Ultimately, we've seen prices continue to rise, and we have seen some extreme rates of property price growth, particularly over the last 5 years. We've had some long periods of low interest rates, which really has inflated property values. At the same time, we haven't had enough supply coming into the market. So demand really has been strong. And when you look at the time it takes to save for a deposit, it's now stretching over 8 years. And when you look back in the early 2000s, that time to save a deposit was sitting at about 6 years. So it is challenging for anybody out there trying to save up that all-important deposit.
Which states or areas are seeing the steepest declines in home ownership among young people? And is Australia alone in experiencing this, or is this happening around the world?
Younger Australians are far less likely to own a home than previous generations. And those home ownership rates between those aged between 30 to 34 years old has dropped across every state and territory. But it really is being led by New South Wales and Victoria. There really is a stark generational gap. When you look at those that are born after the late 80s, they're far less likely to own a home than those that were born in that post-war era. And this isn't just in Australia. Other countries across the world are also experiencing that drop in home ownership, like in the US and also in the UK.
What more needs to be done policy-wise to tackle affordability?
I think really everything needs to be on the table in terms of addressing housing affordability, but there are some big structural things that I think do need to be discussed. And that are things like replacing stamp duty with a broad-based land tax, not only to lower the upfront costs, but it will also increase mobility within our housing market. But we have also a real misallocation of housing across Australia, which means that we have a lot of spare bedroom capacity. If we remove stamp duty, what it could encourage is downsizing. But I also think it's things like reviewing lending standards to balance financial stability with the access to credit, because I do think some first-home buyers do struggle to get the finance needed in order to purchase their first home.
On interest rates, we're expecting at least another interest rate cut this year. How are interest rate cuts impacting affordability, and is it expected to get worse?
Lower rates so far in 2025 have offered some short-term relief by reducing repayments. So at that serviceability level, lower rates are absolutely having an impact. But I think that when you look at the impact of lower rates and what it does for housing demand and borrowing capacities, it obviously lifts borrowing capacities. So those benefits have been partially offset by rising property prices. And when you've got rising property prices, it does diminish the impact of that relief at that serviceability level. And that's absolutely what we have seen. You know, we've seen 3 rate cuts so far this year, and it has provided some momentum back into our housing markets. And our expectation is another rate cut to be delivered in November. Prices are rising, and I think that that is going to overall erase the benefits of that lower serviceability as a result of lower rates.
What's the advice for people looking to enter the market, especially with prices rising and it taking much longer to save for a deposit?
It is taking longer to save for a deposit, and we have the first home buyer scheme from the federal government coming into place as of the 1st of October, which does mean that first home buyers can utilise this scheme and get in with a 5% deposit. That is going to benefit many first home buyers, but I think ultimately what it will likely do is lift property prices. But I think anybody trying to get into the housing market, try to be flexible on property type, consider all types of properties, terrace houses, duplexes, units, and apartments. This can often offer a quicker pathway to purchase. But also look at things like bridesmaid suburbs. You might not be able to afford to get into the suburb that you really desire, but look at a neighbouring suburb that perhaps hasn't gentrified as much as that prime suburb, but eventually will see that gentrification and benefit from future price growth. And I think my third tip is really factor in those government schemes and incentives. See which ones you're actually eligible for and make sure you apply early.
That was Nicola Powell from Domain. To the Australian share market, which has closed 0.3% lower. Six of the 11 sectors ended in red. Healthcare stocks dragging the index down despite a surge from the gold miners. For more, I spoke with Mark Gardner from MPC Markets. Mark, yesterday, solid gains by the banks was able to offset a mass sell-off in the miners. Today, the ASX is in the red. What's driving that?
Overall, broadly, the US lead, whilst it's from an index point of view, been quite positive in the S&P's managed to eke out those small record highs. It's really been concentrated in one particular sector, which is the AI data center, with the likes of Oracle coming out with an outstanding result, signing some huge contracts with the hyperscalers like Google and Meta. And Microsoft recently, where they've seen them go up anywhere near 40% in the last 24 to 36 hours. That's really masking the broader weakness in the US. We had an annual revision which for US payrolls, which is the US jobs numbers, which showed 911,000 less jobs than first thought. And that's the largest revision in history to an annualized payrolls number. Even the second biggest being leading into the GFC years. So I think at the moment, investors are just taking profit. We've run out a little bit of steam here as it stands at the moment. There's concerns over the US economy weakening, particularly in that labor market. All eyes are on the CPI number tonight in the US. And if we get a lower number, it probably locks in a 50 basis point cut potentially. And I think investors are generally taking some risk off the table here at the moment because valuations are overstretched. We've got a slowing economy in the US and trade concerns with a very volatile president in the US.
Let's talk about Oracle. We saw those shares jump by almost 40% after reporting better than expected results. It sent obviously the S&P 500 to a record close. Is that expected to translate to other markets, including ours here in Australia?
Categorically not. Really, it's really only been replicated in the very close cousins stocks like Taiwan Semiconductors in Taiwan, which is also listed in the US, but you saw the likes of Broadcom, Microsoft, and Nvidia do very well. But it's really only those large semiconductor and AI hyperscaling names that have genuinely benefited. And there's such a large concentration of those stocks in terms of market cap in weightings of the index that if those seven or eight really large stocks go up even a couple of percent, it really does mask a broader weakness of the US. And if you have a look at the Dow was actually down a half a percent last night. The S&P was the strongest, but the Nasdaq lagged as well. But the small caps index was down. And that's been the case over the last few sessions where the positivity around, one particular thematic being AI and data centers within AI, these masking a broader weakness in the stock market. So I think the reaction here today is not too bad from the Australian market. I think the banks have been holding up the market fairly well. But even they've stressed that there's going to be some stress on margins or net interest margins, which is why they've taken a few jobs out at quite a few of the big four banks. I would expect the generally seasonal weakness in September to continue.
There was an unexpected fall in US producer prices overnight. They fell for the first time since April, adding to the case for the Fed Reserve to cut interest rates. And it comes ahead, as you mentioned, the monthly CPI data that's out later tonight. Could a drop in those numbers put a bigger rate cut, like 50 basis points, on the table?
Absolutely, it could. And I'm not normally an advocate for extreme rate cuts. I think it generally too loose a monetary policy causes problems down the line. But although it's very popular, and it's why it's very important that central banks maintain their independence. But I do find it a little bit fishy that Trump's fired the Bureau of Labor and Statistics Commissioner last month. He's installing his own man there, Ijan Toney. And since that very abrupt firing, the numbers have seemed to have very much fallen exactly how he needs them to fall, because he has no control. As much as he's jawboned the fact that he would like to fire Jerome Powell or remove federal governors, that system is designed by its very nature to not be politicized. So he has no legal grounds to get rid of anyone unless there's some serious misconduct. So he's gone at it from another angle, and as I say, the figures are now falling very much in favor of getting rates down. And that's more about the fact that the spiraling US debt at the moment, the only thing that really moves the needle on that is rates down a couple of percent. So I think he's really driving a rates down at all costs sort of mentality at the moment, and it will likely force the Fed's hand in terms of apart from the political pressure that he's had them under for the last 2 months. A lower than expected inflation number will probably lock in 50 basis points, I would expect. The market's only expecting 25 at this stage, but that lower reading tonight, would very much put in play a 50 basis point, which is usually reserved for emergency situations.
Finally, what are you telling your customers right now, and where are the opportunities for investors?
At the moment, we're shifting our customers back to very high levels of cash. We've got a stock market, realistically, and it's very tricky because we've got an industrial revolution style, leap in technology with AI going on. So there is a lot of positivity and a lot of hyper growth in some stocks like Nvidia and et cetera. But the broader market is essentially looking quite weak. September is the only negative month on average in the S&P 500. So valuations are at the highest level they've been since the 2001 dot-com bubble burst. We've got 7 out of 7 of the key indicators for stock market valuations used by fund managers all around the world, all flashing red at the moment. And then you've got a softening US economy, a softening labor market, and at least the perception of lowering inflation, although I don't believe that that's actually happening at the main street level. But that tied in with seasonal weakness really is pushing us back to cash. We're really only invested at the moment. I mean, disclaimer, we actually are a holder of Oracle and many of the AI hyperscalers, like Google, for instance. European focused defense stocks as Trump tries to reduce funding in NATO, the Europeans are going to have to start spending more money on defense. And we expect that, given the geopolitical uncertainty going on in the world, well, all over the world at the moment, not only trade wars, but Middle East, et cetera, that defense spending is essentially going to rise by about 1% over the next 12 to 24 months. And that extrapolates out to about $1 trillion, and it's going to be spent by European governments, likely with their European domestic companies. So those two thematics for us are something that we're very high conviction on. Gold and silver as well. That spiraling US debt and lowering rates, despite the fact that this is the top three best 2 year rallies in gold in history. We've got similar stagflationary conditions sort of showing the 1970s, where the number one rally in gold was about 400%. Silver is very cheap, platinum very cheap at the moment for various reasons, but the gold silver ratio at the moment is showing that silver is essentially the cheapest it's been all bar 5 months of the last 50 years. So I think we'll see a flock back to those safe haven assets. And particularly, you've got central bank buying from the BRICS nations as they diversify out of the US dollar.
That was Mark Gardner from MPC Markets. That's all for today. Thanks for joining me.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.